We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
And welcome back to Overnight America. Wow, the Democratic debates are still going on. Watching on MSNBC. Let's see. I think it's Tom Steyer. I think that's who that's speaking right now. But we welcome our very special guest, Rich Rubino, author of American Politics on the Rocks, to give us a rundown of what happened tonight. Hello, Rich.
Hello. How are you?
Good. Is that Tom Steyer right there? It's still going?
Yep, they're still going on. They're doing the closing statement. It should be over in, I'd say, probably 5 or 6 minutes. This is more of a pro forma thing, I think.
I see. So you want to play a debate game with me?
Yes.
Okay. So what we're going to do is we're going to guess what the person's talking about right now, and then I'm going to turn it on, and then we'll both see who's closer. Okay. So is it who do we got going on right now? Is that Gabbard?
I just turned it off, actually.
Okay. So if you want to take a wild guess what they're saying right now, I'll take a guess, too. Do you have any guesses?
Tulsi Gabbard, I would say regime change wars. I would say that she's talking about the foreign policy of the Clinton, Obama, and Bush administration. She's bringing them all together, and she's saying that she's the only one that would completely, do something to the military budget and change the whole system.
All right, let's find out.
For what we call the Aloha Spirit, he said, "We look to you for inspiration as a bold example for what you have already succeeded in the areas of racial harmony."
Oh, racial harmony.
Close. Wow. Okay.
No one expected that one, huh?
Wow, that was completely different about, the message that she's perfected this debate and all the other debates. Wow, that's different.
Yeah. Well, I had very little time to actually watch this debate because I went on the air as it started. So I was listening during some of the breaks and some of the times the news was on. So I was I only caught a very little amount. So what I'm hoping is that during this rundown of what's going on during the Democratic debate tonight, you can give us a pretty clear picture. There's only one thing I caught. I mean, the entire time, only one note I wrote down, and I'll give you my one observation. So when Klobuchar was talking, she had, for whatever reason, her hair was like gelled or moosed in a certain way that it shaked like a nervous chihuahua. And I was so distracted by that. Because she'd move her head and her hair would shake and it made her look super nervous. And it was just the way her hair was gelled. And I thought, oh boy, that's one of those little things that no one caught, but they should have before she walked on the stage.
Well, yeah, that reminds me of when Barack Obama was delivering his State of the Union addresses and John Boehner was right behind him, and it was January. And you'd say, how is somebody who's in Ohio and Washington that tan? And I would just be transfixed to just looking at John Boehner. You could not pay attention to anything else Obama was saying. I'm just saying, how does somebody get that tan?
Yeah. All right. So tonight we had 10 on the stage: Biden, Booker, Buttigieg, Gabbard, Harris, Klobuchar, Sanders, Steyer, Warren, and Yang. Overall, what are some of your impressions from tonight?
I think the big moment was actually probably Tulsi Gabbard and Kamala Harris. Mm-hmm. There was an incident a few debates ago when Tulsi Gabbard kind of came out of nowhere. I don't think Senator Harris was expecting this whatsoever, and basically excoriated her for putting people in jail or having people in jail for marijuana use while she had essentially made fun of the fact that she had done marijuana herself. Mm-hmm. So the last debate, the last two debates they haven't really tangled, but in this debate specifically, Kamala Harris really excoriated, I guess you could say, Tulsi Gabbard when she was taught, Tulsi Gabbard essentially said, she went after specifically now this is interesting, it's a Democratic debate, and she was going after Hillary Clinton, but she talks about the Hillary Clinton, the Clinton Bush Trump foreign policy. Uh-huh. So she incorporated Hillary Clinton after she was asked a question essentially that she had said earlier about how opposed she was about Hillary Clinton's foreign policy, how it had killed millions of people. Talking about Libya, talking about foreign policy, and she backed it up in this debate, and she said essentially, yes, that we need a new foreign policy, we need to end these quote-unquote regime change wars, that's kind of, her tagline, that's her watchword, And Kamala Harris comes back at her and says, well, you know, you're the person who essentially met with Bashar al-Assad, the dictator in Syria. Mm-hmm. And Harris comes right back and says essentially that I'm not going to put party ahead of country. She said essentially that, you know, she's basically making the case, I think, that she's not going to be a representative of the Democratic Party, that she's going to have her own positions. And this is extremely reminiscent, I always say this, of Ron Paul back in 2008. You know, the first few debates, Ron Paul kind of towed the party line. Then foreign policy came up, and he was talking about the Iraq War. And he was talking about why we were attacked on September 11th, and he said essentially they came over here because we were over there, meaning our interventionist foreign policy. And Tulsi Gabbard essentially is saying the same thing. She's saying something that's not orthodox Democratic. That's not orthodox Democratic belief. She's saying essentially that we need a completely new foreign policy that's different to both the Democratic and the Republican Party. And she went after the Democrats, and then Donald Trump's campaign on Twitter essentially said what she was going after the Democratic Party, and they posted that a quote that she had actually said. So it's going to be interesting because, on the one hand, the biggest fear the Democrats have right now is that Tulsi Gabbard is going to walk away from the party, leave the reservation, and somehow either run as a Green Party nominee or run as a third party nominee, potentially siphoning 2 or 3% of the support off, which potentially in a very close election could tip the scales to Donald Trump or whoever the Republican nominee is. Now, she has said she would not do that. She's categorically ruled it out. I don't think she's going to do it. But I'll say this. If the Democratic Party continues to alienate her, and there's always this possibility, she could use this as potential leverage, and she could say something to the effect of, you know, if you don't put this in the Democratic platform, I'm going to go on my own, and I'm going to run as an independent. You know, she's very much in the catbird seat. You saw similar positions, for example, 1968, Eugene McCarthy. His endorsement for Hubert Humphrey was so important that they got him to make the endorsement at the end. 1992, Jerry Brown did not endorse Bill Clinton until late in the campaign. He spoke at the convention without endorsing him. They need Tulsi Gabbard's endorsement because they need every Democrat that they possibly can get. And the worst fear they possibly have is that they really alienate her, specifically Senator Harris, and later Pete Buttigieg got into a debate with her as well, and she leaves the reservation.
Ooh, boy. Well, this sets up some interesting storylines because we're getting really close to the start of the year 2020. Is there a debate in December, or do they skip that month?
Yes, I think they have a debate in Los Angeles.
Oh.
That's the next debate. And Cory Booker, in his closing statement, I just saw that. Interestingly, he essentially pleaded for money, saying that, you know, I've not gotten into that debate yet. And now, obviously, if he does not get into that debate, my guess is that he will decide that he's not going to probably carry on with the rest of the election process. So it's really do or die for him. And in many respects, he's admitting it's do or die for him.
Let's play the game again. Kamala Harris is up right now. If you had to guess what she's talking about, what do you think she's saying right now?
I'm going to say, again, civil rights, and I'm going to say that she does not like Donald Trump.
All right, let's take a listen.
Promise of America, and that's the America I believe in. That's the America I see, and that is why I'm running for president.
Oh, we didn't get to, it was at the tail end. We didn't hear what she was talking about, but who finds out? Let's see if there's anyone else left on the stage. Oh, Pete Buttigieg. Okay, how does he start his closing statement?
He's going to talk about the fact that he served in the military, and he's going to say something to the effect of that what we need is experience, not Washington experience. We need experience of an outsider.
All right, let's find out.
In a way that reflected the need to expand opportunity to those who were excluded. And just as local leaders have shown great leadership, we need to use the powers of the presidency on challenges like this, expanding opportunity and expanding a sense of belonging to those who have been excluded in this country.
Okay, Pete Buttigieg.
You know what's interesting? One interesting factoid about Pete Buttigieg.
Mm-hmm.
So he's the youngest. He's the second youngest mayor of the city of South Bend, Indiana.
Mm-hmm.
You know who the youngest mayor was?
No.
Schuyler Colfax, who later became Ulysses S. Grant's vice president.
Oh, really?
So
there is
history of a vice president of somebody from South Bend, Indiana, becoming either the president or the vice president. Of course, Schuyler Colfax, in between, he became Speaker of the House, so it's not like he just went from one to the other, but there is history of somebody going there. And there's never been somebody who's gone directly from being a mayor to the president. The last one who was a mayor was Calvin Coolidge, who served as mayor of Northampton, Massachusetts, but no one's gone directly from the mayorship to the presidency.
Oh, that's interesting, because when you think of mayors, it's always New York, right? The Giuliani's or the Bloomberg's or whoever. You think of the big cities that they run for office that they may have a little notoriety in the trades, and people at least know who they are.
Yeah, South Bend is the fourth biggest city in a medium-sized state with about 102,000 people.
Yeah. All right, Rich, do you mind holding on? We can get some more of your impressions coming up after the break.
Absolutely.
Rich Rubino, American Politics on the Rocks. He watched the Democratic debate, so you didn't have to. Well, no, I was doing the show, so I didn't really catch it. So this is good. I can be caught up, and I can know exactly what happened tonight thanks to Rich Rubino's awesome analysis, which is going to continue next. He's got his book called American Politics on the Rocks. Look it up. It's Overnight America, KMOX. And welcome back to Overnight America. Looks like the debate is just now wrapping up.
This is going to pick up our coverage in just a moment.
All right, there it is. They're saying goodbye for MSNBC's coverage. We'll talk to Kristen Arnold, who actually gives us a rundown of who had the most speaking time. It's always interesting to see who they gave the most attention to. And also, how did the moderators handle it? How were their questions? How did it all go on that end? But before we get to that point, we bring back our friend Rich Rubino. You normally hear him on Mondays talking about American politics on the rocks, but in general, we like to put some historical context. But he watched the Democratic debates tonight, and we're going to get some more information from our friend Rich. Thank you for sticking around.
Oh, you're welcome.
So it just wrapped up now. Brian Williams is on there. He's given a little post-analysis to the debates. So the big polling players, like the Joe Bidens, Elizabeth Warrens of the world, how did they do tonight?
I think Joe Biden generally did pretty well. However, I mean, in the aggregate, there was one moment though, which I think is really going to stand out, where he was talking about the fact that he said he has the endorsement of the only African American female to be elected to the United States Senate. He was referring to Kara Mosley Braun, who actually served the same seat that Barack Obama later served in. Mm-hmm. But there was one other African American woman who actually got elected to the United States Senate, mm-hmm. and interestingly, she was on the stage. That was Kamala Harris.
That's right.
She goes, what? And then you saw the look. They had a two-shot with her and Cory Booker. Basically, he was talking about all the support he had with the African-American community, which is completely true.
Uh-huh.
He's killing everyone in South Carolina because he has support in that community. So he was talking about it. Then he said, I have three former Congressional Black Caucus chairmen who have endorsed me, and I have the only female. And then everyone's looking, and then Kamala Harris just has this weird, like, you know, she's like, what am I? What is going on here? And that's going to be the thing that everyone's going to remember. I thought generally Joe Biden, you know, showed that he performed relatively well in this debate. But I think that's the one thing people are going to remember. I will say, though, that for a debate, if you look at any polls, the Democrats are not interested in any ideological litmus test. They're interested in somebody who can beat Donald Trump.
Mm-hmm.
They're not interested on, you know, I'm looking to trying to get the most liberal person that's running. I always bring the example of Tom Harkin when he ran in 92. He said he was a quote-unquote no apologies liberal that year. The Democratic Party decided they'd been out of power for 12 years, so they nominated a moderate Southerner in Bill Clinton. Amy Klobuchar, interestingly, the senator from Minnesota, who I always say I thought Pete Buttigieg was going to be the first one that was going to get into that top tier. She's the second one I think has been getting in that top tier.
Mm-hmm.
She was, interestingly, because she does not try to pander to the left wing of the Democratic Party. She's almost running a national campaign already. She talks about her plan, and she says, I'm going to show you exactly how I will pay for them. She said, I'm going to show you how I'm going to pay for these plans meticulously, quote-unquote. So she's showing some sort of, I guess, fiscal probity. But she also talks about, you know, the fact that Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, the two major candidates from the left, for example, support wiping out everybody's student debt. She says, I'm not going to wipe out student debt, or I'm not going to pay for free college for wealthy people, for example.
Mm-hmm.
She's running a very national campaign, and she also talks about the fact that she's won in Minnesota. Now, Minnesota is a state that hasn't gone for Republican since 1972, when it was McGovern. But it's become more and more conservative the last few elections, and Donald Trump almost won there, and there's a possibility could win there again. But she talks about how electable she's been in Minnesota, and it's true, she's won in the congressional district, formerly represented by Michelle Bachmann, for example, one of the most conservative Democrats in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And she also talks about how she's gotten legislation through, and it's true, she has gotten about 100 pieces of legislation through the United States Senate, where she was the chief author, not somebody who's, you know, it's very easy to be a co-sponsor. A lot of the United States senators will say, I sponsor this. Well, a co-sponsor just means you sign on to a piece of paper that says you're one of, you know, 97 other people that vote that's going to support it.
Mm-hmm.
But she actually talks about how she was actually the person who authored some of this legislation. And the other one who I think Cory Booker was kind of a lackadaisical appearance up until the very late part of this debate. And there was a moment where Joe Biden seemed to be scot-free on the fact that he had suggested that he was against the decriminalization of marijuana because he says there are still further studies, and he still thinks it's a gateway drug. Mm-hmm. So Cory Booker went after him for the fact that he was a supporter of the drug war, and basically he said, you know, I heard what you said about marijuana. He said, were you high when you said that?
Oh, no.
To the effect. And then everybody laughs. People know who Cory Booker is, and then Joe Biden comes back and says, all I've said is that he basically gave the libertarian position, which has become the Democratic position, de facto Democratic position, saying that he would expunge all the records from everybody who's been convicted of a nonviolent marijuana-related offense. But he said he's still studying the decriminalization because he still thinks it could be a gateway drug, which is something that no other Democrat on that stage is saying, and it's something that's very unpopular with the Democratic base right now.
There was a moment where I thought they were trying to get a little artsy with the camera angles. MSNBC was doing some really creative things. It was almost like you were watching a movie where they felt like they couldn't stay on any screen for more than 3 seconds. They had to cut, yeah. cut. You know, they just couldn't keep the camera on one person in particular. And then they were doing some interesting things where they do some really quick zoom-ins during what they thought were dramatic moments. I noticed that once with Bernie Sanders. Now, there was another moment, too, I wanted to bring up because, I Bernie Sanders being up there in the polls as well. I felt like they were just waiting for him to say his line. They're like, say the line, Bernie, say the line. Because I heard one of those moments in one of the breaks we had here. And then he finally said the line, which was, I wrote the bill.
I wrote the damn bill.
So they were waiting for him to say the line. And how did Bernie do tonight?
I thought he did relatively well. I mean, the last debate, I thought he got a lot of sympathy because he had just, you know, recovered from what was a mild heart attack. In this debate, I thought he did relatively well. You know, he generally sticks on his talking points. The one thing he's going to remember for this debate, though, is something that very few Democratic or Republican candidates talk about when he's talking about foreign policy. First of all, he voluntarily talked about the Israeli-Palestinian situation, which most candidates only talk about when they absolutely have to, when people bring up the question directly, specifically in the Democratic Party, because there's a divide between members like Senator Harris, Vice President Biden, who are seen as more supportive of the Israeli government, and then there's a left wing divide, more younger people, Generation X's, millennials, who are more sympathetic to what's going on, the human cost of what's going on in Gaza. And he volunteered this information, something that only Tulsi Gabbard, I thought, potentially could have done. He said, you know, right now what's going on in Gaza is unacceptable, and youth unemployment is between 60% and 70%. And got a rousing ovation, a uproarious round of applause for that. I think this potentially could help him differentiate himself on the left from Elizabeth Warren, because there are a lot of voters that are looking between Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders and saying, what's the difference? And mm-hmm. One difference with Bernie Sanders is that Bernie Sanders stars the fact that he is different than the Democratic establishment on the issue of Israeli and Palestine. He is somebody who has come out and he mentions the Palestinian situation specifically. He doesn't get asked, even when he's not asked about it. And he talks about the situation in Gaza as being unacceptable while saying he also supports Israel. This is the one thing that I think that it differentiates himself with Elizabeth Warren. Elizabeth Warren, she has a very kind of a wishy-washy position on it. She tries to kind of take both sides like she did earlier on the Medicare issue. She really is going to have to come out and potentially try to outflank Bernie on that. Otherwise, I can see some people who, as I say, if it's between Bernie and Elizabeth, that could be the defining issue.
All right, so a couple of them at the bottom of the polls right now. So you have a Steyer and a Yang.
Yes.
Did they have any moments that you think could be something that would push them up a little bit?
Tom Steyer, no. You know, with the amount of money he spent to get into this debate, you would think he would have. Andrew Yang is kind of the Mike Huckabee of this campaign. Remember, when Mike Huckabee was running in 2008, he had some great one-liners. Mm-hmm. Like, for example, he talked about Congress spending more money than John Edwards at a beauty shop, I remember. Andrew Yang has some great one-liners. For example, there was one point where Tom Steyer was talking about something. We're talking about what he had accomplished, and then some people had gone after him. And then, you know, Andrew Yang essentially says, you know, compliments Tom Steyer, and then Steyer says, "Oh, thank you, Andrew." And then he says, essentially, you know, "Oh, you're welcome." But he's very, he says, "Oh, you're welcome," like that. He says, you know, he's very quick on his feet. He's also very good with an anecdote. Every example, for example, he was talking about some people that he had met along the campaign trail. He's very good. He's very good at this, and he's, for somebody who's, he's really a non-politician. He's not run for anything. I mean, he's, you know, he really is an outsider. I will say one other thing. Somebody brought up the fact, but Pete Buttigieg, the fact that the one time he'd won statewide in Indiana, he'd lost by 25 points. Mm-hmm. And I wonder how few people actually know this, but he actually ran for treasurer before he became mayor of South Bend, Indiana, right when he was kind of out of Harvard. He'd worked at McKinsey. He'd worked as a consultant. And that was something that a lot of people are going to see. So they're probably going to see that his electoral bona fides, he has actually lost an election. But then again, so did Barack Obama. And another thing, it's interesting, another similarity between Buttigieg and Obama is when Obama, they had the very similar circumstances. Hillary Clinton back in 2008 constantly hammered Barack Obama on not having experience. And Obama's reply at the time was, well, I didn't have Washington experience, and look at what Washington's done. And Pete Buttigieg at one point said, well, look at, you know, is this really what, essentially what we want, what's going on in Washington right now? And it's very hard for somebody who's been in Washington. You know, everyone hates Congress. They hate everybody except for their own representative that they vote with 70% of the vote. But they hate everybody. They hate the other 434 representatives. And Buttigieg is basically saying, you know, I'm from outside of Washington. You're inside Washington. What have you done? And it's very hard for a United States senator to say, well, you know, basically you should keep – we're doing a great job in the United States Senate. I've never seen a politician actually say that. Usually they come out and they go after Washington, they go after the Washington culture, but of course they're part of it. So the argument is, if you're that effective, then how come Washington's still the same way it actually is? But of course, you know, you're one of 100 senators, but yeah. The American people don't really understand. The voters don't necessarily understand the nuances. They just say Washington's all corrupt and they're all part of it. So.
From what I understand, Joe Biden's been around long enough. There was 48 senators when he was voted in. All right.
He was elected the day he was elected. Yes, the day he was elected to the United States Senate, Richard Nixon was reelected.
Wow,
president.
Isn't that
1972.
Something?
That's how long it's been since Joe Biden's been in the presidency. Lyndon Johnson was still alive when Joe Biden was the first elected to the United States Senate.
All right, American politics. Otherwise,
not even born.
Oh, I know. There's a bunch of those. You could probably go back and look and cite. American Politics on the Rocks is the name of your book. If people wanted to look you up online, where can they find you?
Just go to www.polita-geek.com.
Polita-geek.com, and everything you need to know we get from Rich Rubino tonight. American Politics on the Rocks. Go get that book already. Rich, thank you so much for coming on to KMOX.
Oh, thanks so much for having me on.
Rich is the best. He's so good. He joins us on the Quiver River Electric KMOX guest line on Overnight America KMOX. I'm going to bring this up because I think most people are tired of politics. They're tired of what's going on in Washington, D.C., that they may be at a boiling over point when it comes to frustrations with everything, including this umpire. And I found this on CBS Sports. Parents at a youth sporting event could be quite opinionated. Ain't that the truth? One time, just one season, I coached third grade basketball for the city of Lima when I was living in Lima. And they were just looking for people. And apparently they put a league together of kids that don't play through their schools. So normally, you know, third grade is still pretty young. So they put a league together for them and they just needed people. And I said, you know what, this might be fun. So twice a week I would go hold practices. And then on Saturdays we'd have a game. I am terrible at basketball. I barely know the rules of basketball, but I looked online some things that would be good. And I was a really good coach. I mean, we went undefeated that year. I couldn't believe it. We had some really talent. I felt like my team was stacked. I don't know how it happened. Apparently, they do this little draft where they try to make it so every team has the same skill level, and then you go out and you play in this thing. But we had a good time, and the kids were awesome. And I often wonder if any of them continued playing after that. This is many years ago. They're probably all in high school now. But when I was coaching, I realized that parents can have sometimes a hands-on role and sometimes a hands-off role. So it happened to be a hands-off role for me. I don't even think I met half of the parents or even most of the parents until the last game of the year because I put on a pizza party for all the kids. You know, I did that all out of pocket because I wanted to do it for them. And I bought them little tiny trophies and things. It was actually pretty neat. So we did that sort of thing and, you know, it was a nice little fun time. But the parents were all good, didn't have any issues. They all stood behind me if I benched their kid for doing something they shouldn't have done. You know, actions have consequences type of deal. All the kids, they do, they watch NBA and they're like, oh, I'm just going to go shoot threes all day. I told you, if you shoot a three, I'm benching you. What did the kid do? He goes in there, shoots a three, misses. I benched him for the rest of the game. He cried the whole time on the bench. You know, third grade, he's crying his eyes out. Oh, I can't play. So I had a good time coaching. Parents were good. It's not like that for all youth sports. If you're one of those parents that yells at the ref or the umpires and gets in their face, let me just put it this way. Number one, you're not liked by the other parents for that activity. They don't admire your ability to go get into the ref's face. And number two, if you are the one that's out there yelling and screaming and you can't control yourself, you got to learn some very simple techniques on how to cool down and just enjoy the game for the way it is. Especially when they're that young, when they're really young. This happened in Newport Harbor, California. Parents were berating the way that this umpire was calling the game. So you know what this umpire did? He said, all right, cut it out. And they kept continuing. He said, fine, I'm out. He walked off the field. He said, do it yourself. He did what I think most people wish they had the guts to do. He just walked right off. Listen to this.
I'm not hearing another word of anyone.
Then be there.
No, wait a second. Did you just hear me?
Yeah, I heard you.
Okay, do you want to have a game here?
Joe, quiet down.
He's like, well, I'm not having it anymore. You're going to cut it out. He's like, did you just hear me? Yeah, I heard you. And all the parents are still getting into this ref's or this ump's face.
It's a baseball game.
Hey, stay professional for the kids and just do your job.
Stay professional for the kids and do your job. That's what pushed him over the limit.
Come on.
That's it.
Come on.
Jesus.
You've
got it.
All right, so ref's out. He's like, bye. There he goes. He's gone. See you later. Good for this ump. I tell you what, I admire him. I think it's awesome. Have you ever had one of those moments where you just walked off? You're like, that's it. I'm out of here. Maybe it's at a job. Do you ever one of those moments where maybe you're at a game, you just walked out, a family gathering, Thanksgiving is coming up. It could be very stressful with the family. Did you ever have one of those moments where you just said, fine, I'm out of here. See you later. Bye. I'd love to hear the story. Tell me the moment you walked out of something. 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. Following the remark, the ump was off the field. This video was posted by a TikTok user. It has been viewed more than 340,000 times. Good for this ump. Very good for this ump. All right, what did you walk out of? I got to hear that story because I'm sure there's some good ones out there. 314-436-7900. It's Overnight America, KMOX. Welcome back to Overnight America. Wow, really? No one listening right now has had a moment where they just walked out and said, I'm done. See you later. Bye. I can't believe that. I really can't. Is it just that rare that people are willing to put up with more than they should? I could think of a lot of instances where I wish I would have walked out and never did. Maybe there's just more instances where you wanted to, but found yourself not. I think there's a couple of times where, you know, you've been at certain places and you try to sneak out and hopefully no one notices that you're sneaking out. Like you just kind of, so I think that's pretty common, but it's not for the same reasons that this umpire decides to leave in the middle of the youth baseball game, and good for him to do that. He didn't even go to the benches. He didn't talk to the different coaches for the respective teams. He just said, all right, we're done. And for those parents, I hope they're ashamed of themselves, and I hope that they can go back and look at this and realize people are not siding with them. I think that all the people that I've seen online that have given this a comment, they said, good for this ump. None of them have said, oh, those parents were right to berate that umpire. No one said that. And hopefully, maybe they look back at this and in some way, in some stupid way, they'll realize maybe a slap on the back of the head was necessary for them to correct how dumb they were acting. And maybe this is their slap. So if you had that moment where you've walked out of something, I'd love to hear the story. Judy calling in from Alton. At least we got one person that had a story like that. Hi, Judy.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
Well, I had an aunt of my sister and my mother's that I'd been helping the last 4 or 5 years. Her dementia was very mild, but she was always the one crazy aunt. You know, my mom had 6 sisters, and this was the one that she was crazy from early years. So trying to determine her dementia as she got older was a little difficult, but I would go over, pick her up, take her places, two or three times a week. One day I called and I said, I'll be there about 1:15.
Mm-hmm.
And she was always just, always, nothing was ever right, but I just kind of persevered through.
Uh-huh.
I was her power of attorney, wanted to be nice, and I got there 15 minutes late.
Mm-hmm.
I mowed my mom's grass before I was heading over that way. I was trying to hurry, and as I walked in the door, I said, hey, I'm here to pick you up. And she goes, I don't need to go anywhere today.
Hmm.
I said, well, we were going to go shopping, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I was going to take you to CVS or whatever.
Yeah.
No, I'm fine. I don't need to go anywhere. And Ryan, I'm a nurse. I tried to always just turn the other cheek. At that moment, I said, you know what? That's fine. And I turned around and I walked out.
Oh, okay. So you were done trying to convince
I'm
her.
I'm done. Yeah. I've tried to smooth it over. I know you're getting older, but I know you know what you just did to me. It took 3 days, Ryan, and she finally called me. She says, I am so sorry.
Oh, how about that? You got an apology. Whoa.
I wasn't looking for an apology. Just don't do it to me again.
Yeah.
You know, I know you're getting older. I'm giving you that benefit of the doubt. You're 20 years older than me, but you still know what you're doing, and you're just bossy because she'd been a single woman all of her life. And I thought, this is it. I'm done.
Yeah.
And I felt better for it after she apologized, but, you know, you just don't know. I'm done. It takes a lot to just turn around and walk out.
All right, Jody. I'm glad you shared that. Thank you for that.
Hey, thank you.
All right, bye. Wow, those family stories, that it can't get heated anytime you have any sort of family story like that. Thanksgiving this week, do you think there's going to be more people that have the courage to stand up and leave? Like you're at the table, you're sitting down, and you're just waiting for it. Someone's going to bring up politics, and they try to coach you, and they try to coach the family. Don't bring up politics. Don't bring up politics. And don't bring up politics. And then someone brings up politics, and you're ready to get up from the table. That's it. Just trying to eat my turkey in peace. And at that point, you're looking and you're thinking, is it really worth this delicious meal to have to sit here and listen to it? I don't know. At that point, it depends if I put gravy on everything yet. If you get a full plate of something, you put gravy on everything, right? During Thanksgiving, that's the way to go. I'll have a full plate stacked from side to side. I mean, it almost looks like I put a puzzle together. The whole thing's just full of food. You can't see the plate at all. And it doesn't matter what it is. It could be the cranberry sauce. I still put gravy on it. It just, the gravy's so perfect with everything. Need a little bit of that. If you got any more of those stories, I'd love to hear them at 314-436-7900 or 800-925-1120. And right after we come back from break, Kristen Arnold's going to be joining us. She's a expert in panel moderation, and she's a rules analyst, the website rulesanalyst.com. She'll look at the moderators from the debate tonight, give us a rundown of who had the most time on stage, okay? Also want to look at some radio stories here. There's a radio contest that happened in Florida. I've never heard of this in my entire life. I didn't even know this was a possibility when it comes to radio station giveaways. We're going to talk about what happened down in Florida with, I think his name's The Big Mama. That's what he calls himself. It's a guy. He calls himself The Big Mama. He's a radio personality. I've never heard of this person before, but I can tell I already am annoyed by his show because they showed one clip on CBS of his show. And he gets up and he's doing like the morning show zoo routine. It's the Big Mama in the morning. And all the other people in the studio had cowbells. They're going, ding, 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 ding. And they're like ringing the bells. Yeah. Oh, you got to be kidding. Yikes. You know, there's another story I wanted to get to before we go to break here. It's CBS News coming up at the top of the hour with Alex Degman doing news as well. Fox 2 did this, and this is actually out of the Associated Press, but a sweeping review has found that close to 90% of Missouri rape kits have never been tested. Attorney General Eric Schmidt announced Wednesday that only 830 of the 7,000 total kits were previously tested. And we know this was something when Josh Hawley was attorney general. He said, we're going to make a big push to try to get these rape kits tested. This is such a shame. I mean, this is an absolute shame. We look at people that have made accusations, and we've looked at people that will go online and they'll say some things and we'll take them seriously and we find out they're not true. We find that people are very good at going and trying to throw dirt or try to go back into people's pasts and then they'll say things and then people just take their sides because it's sensational. And this happens all the time to celebrities. People are just out there to get certain people. I want to say we have, in this case, actual physical evidence that can be used to take someone who is accused of raping an individual to court and use this evidence to make sure they are held accountable for what they do. Now, I don't know what it would take for a woman to have to go and report this. It's an awful lot of courage because I'm sure it's something that they don't prefer to do in their free time or just they do for fun. But they were brave enough to come forward and say, I was sexually assaulted and raped by an individual. They take this evidence and then they put it into a locker at the police station and nothing happens to it. How infuriating would that be if that was one of your family members that was tested and the person that raped your family member is still on the street running around and the evidence that would put them in jail to be held accountable for it is still thinking like, oh, I guess I'm free to go. No big deal. Of all those different kits, they got to start testing these and they have to do it faster and they got to stop dragging their feet on this. This is an absolute shame. So many other states are having issues with this. It's not just Missouri. They got to fix this. This is a huge injustice. It's Overnight America.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.